When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Matthew 16:13-16. Now it's time for Who Do You Say I Am with Father Mitch Pacwa. And now, Father Pacwa.
Peace to God be with you. I'm Father Mitchell Pacwa, and we're here to talk about the New Age movement. We've been talking about some of the shifts that are going on in the way New Agers see the world. And before we can begin to understand there are various practices that make headlines, such as crystals and all, we need to understand the basic philosophy. And that's what we're trying to do at this point, and try to understand it from their perspective. Also, I should mention to you that in the past, we've already started to grow some crystals of our own, because this is a very natural process. And if you take a look at our bowl of crystals here, you can see that they've grown considerably. This is a very natural process. The water has interacted with the beginning roots of the crystal, that is the powder that we mixed in there from a science kit, and they've expanded up the bowl, but it sort of looks like ice in Chicago in the wintertime, and doesn't look much different from that because ice itself is a very common crystal, one of the most common on the planet, in fact. But we'll continue to look at that as the weeks go along. Today I'd like to talk more about the role of physics and how physics has taken effect on the New Age perspective, and also on some research on the brain. Now, two of the people who have talked most about the role of physics and the New Age movement are Fritjof Capra in his book, The Tao of Physics, and also Gary Zukor, who wrote the Dancing Wu Li Dancing Wu Li. It's a way to deal with physics in a New Age perspective. And we need to understand this as a key part of the movement, because they make a lot of metaphysical statements based on what we see in physics. Now, what are they rejecting? Fritjof Capra talks about that. The New Age movement is rejecting an older physics, that of Newton, where the universe was understood as a great big mechanical clock, or big machine, and that it followed certain clear principles all the time. And saying that's too limited. Now, he also goes on from that is that Newton's perspective divided up reality into these cleared and distinct parts. And that's a very masculine way of thinking, to divide everything up, and it's too rationalistic. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that the New Age criticizes is rationalism. There's a strong rejection of the rationalistic point of view that existed in the 18th century and forward that has affected science. Instead of rationalism, what the New Agers want to do is see a holistic point of view. Also, they reject the Jewish and Christian understanding of God, because the Jewish-Christian understanding is that God is the Creator was uncreated, has always been, and never is part of creation, but instead God made creation. And what do the New Agers object to in that? They say, and Fritjof Capra is one of the people who talks about this, as I understand it, is that God is cut off from creation because he's totally distinct from it. He's wholly other from it. And because he's severed from creation, creation is not as sacred anymore. Creation is no longer God, as it is for the pantheists in India, or for the animists in Africa and Australia and other places, North America, where gods live in the various trees and rocks, and the earth is alive, and that creation has become desacralized, not as holy, as it is for these people, the pantheists and such. And therefore, it's the Christian view of God is able to exploit nature, that human beings are there to use creation as much as they want. They can use all the stuff they see in the creation, and they don't have to worry about, you know, what's going to happen in the future or about love for the creation itself, simply because God is separate from it and creation is secular and desacralized. A further criticism of Christianity and Judaism is that God is masculine. And that supports the Newtonian point of view that you divide up the world into all these little parts. Well, they reject all that. What do they accept instead? And what's their alternative? For Fritjof Capra, he takes a look at a number of things. And not only Capra, but also Zhukov and others. That they see that the new physics teaches us some interesting points of view. For instance, Niels Bohr came up with the complementarity principle. And what does that mean? Niels Bohr noticed that when we took a look at subatomic particles, the small parts of the atom, and the tiniest parts of, you know, the electrons and everything else, and the parts below the electrons, all that make it up, they notice that sometimes it acts like waves and goes like this. And sometimes it seems to be particles. Light behaves that way, light photons. Sometimes light comes across as waves, and sometimes it's like little packets. Well, that's complementary. And that complementarity principle says you've got to accept the fact that both are there. All right? And then another principle is from Werner Heisenberg, a very famous physicist. And this is the uncertainty principle, that sometimes subatomic particles behave like energy and sometimes like solid matter. And you don't know necessarily when it's going to behave like what. At least I don't know. Physicists might know, but it seems that they don't know either. That's why there's uncertainty. Now, this runs into difficulty because at the subatomic level, how can they predict things? Science, no longer is able to know for sure how a subatomic particle is going to behave. And so there's uncertainty then. Then we have Einstein's theory, E equals mc squared. That is, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. We know that from Max Planck that the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. And then you multiply 186,000 by 186,000, and then you get, and multiply that against mass, then you get energy. What does that mean? Well, that everything is really energy. Well, from this, Capra and others, and Zhukov, for instance, come up with some interesting views of the universe. That therefore, everything is energy. It's all one. And this fits into the monism, that everything is energy. And they also start to say that we have to have a more intuitive way of understanding, an intuitive approach toward the universe, and not this rational point of view where you take things apart in a masculine way. Instead, have a feminine spirituality that sees everything as a whole and sees all life as part of a whole and sees the rhythms and the cycles of life and death as part of a whole. And then instead of worshiping a father, we need to worship, feminine gods, or gods who are masculine and feminine. Now, this is a very different shift of paradigm from Christianity. It's not at all like Judaism. It's not part of our Western tradition. Let's come back in just a moment to try to understand where we can go with it, and then also to look some more at what the study of the brain leads us to. Welcome back. We've just been taking a look at the paradigm shift that some New Agers who are interested in physics have presented to the New Age movement. and that this becomes a scientific support for the New Age belief in pantheism and monism, and also becomes the start for a belief in the worship of a feminine god, a goddess, the Earth Mother, and that the Earth is alive, and that everything depends on consciousness. And in fact, that there is no such thing as objectivity, because everything, you know, of the uncertainty principle and so on. Well, what are we to say to that? First of all, I've asked some of my friends who are physicists about it. And one physicist, whom, as a matter of fact, we'll interview in another episode, an astrophysicist, who will talk to us about the physics of astronomy versus astrology, Dr. Jeffrey Mallow, describes what he calls science anxiety. We live in a culture where there has been a lot of rationalism and a lot of influence of science, and science is very important. And if something can be proven scientifically, we tend to believe it. Even though we also know that it doesn't take long for scientists to disprove some parts of earlier theories and keep on developing their thought. But we tend to have a lot of respect and trust in science. Now, what does this mean for, you know, the science anxiety? Well, if we find that there's a scientific basis, we'll say, oh yeah, it must be true. And yet at the same time, a lot of people are afraid of science, afraid that it's too hard to understand, it's too hard to work with, I need it simplified, I'm afraid of mathematics. I feel a lot of that personally. I've always done poorly in math once we get, you know, past algebra. I just don't understand it very well, and I feel a lot of that science anxiety, and try to study what I can, you know, from people who popularize science. But what we have to be aware of, according to physicists who've talked to me, like Dr. Mallow and others, is that we have some of this information that is true scientifically, that there's complementarity. Sometimes, you know, subatomic particles behave like waves, sometimes like particles. That's true. That's a very important principle of physics. And that there is complementarity. Sometimes subatomic particles appear to be like matter, sometimes like energy, as Heisenberg said. And Einstein's theory is true. We have no problem with that. But none of those gentlemen came up with a metaphysics based on what's true for subatomic particles. And at this point, I find that physicists are very cautious about what kind of metaphysics, that is, what does this say about the nature of the universe? For one thing, the physicists themselves will say, we know too little about physics to be able to say that this is what the universe is really like, and that based on uncertainty and complementarity and Einstein's theory of energy, that we just can go ahead and say that everything is all energy, it's all one, and so on. They say that's too soon, that's premature. And that what we have to do at this point in the stage of the development of physics is allow the principles to exist and go on to learn more about physics, and perhaps in future generations see what that means in terms of metaphysics, that is, the nature of the universe, the nature of being. And that in fact we need to take a look at, you know, other points of view, for instance, our own reason and our understanding of what must follow from various aspects of what we know about human existence and human reality, and use that the best we can, but, you know, have a certain amount of willingness to keep on learning and not close ourselves off from what we have in the limited amount of physics that we know at this point. Something else that we have to take a look at will be the importance of the nature of our religion. It's not like Christianity had, an idea where we're going to look at the Newtonian worldview and see that this is a masculine approach where you take things apart, and therefore we're going to worship a God the Father and have a masculine God and have a God that fits in with our physics. That's not the way we got our religion. That, you know, there's violence to our sense of history. The reality of our past is that Christ, who claims to be the, you know, God the Son, the one whom the Father sent to us, the one through whom the world was created, He's the one that told us that God is his father and loves us as an Abba, that is our daddy. And that he didn't come there to teach us about God the Father as some support for Newtonian physics. That's just not the case. Nor does our idea as Christians that God is uncreated and therefore, you know, not part of creation, but rather distinct from it. And there's a big gulf between God the Creator and the creation he made. But because we believe that, that does not mean that we have the right to pollute, to do anything else wrong to creation. In fact, what we see is that in the very beginning, when God created the man, he made him in God's own image and likeness to have reason and to have immortality, to have a soul that will last through all eternity. And that he took the man and the woman and put them in charge. When he created human beings, he put them in charge of creation to be stewards, to be caretakers of it. We see this in Genesis chapter 2 when the man is put in the garden in order to till it, to take care of the earth. That's the spirituality of the earth that we should have. And that pollution and other abuses of the environment are not part of Christianity, and they don't flow from Christian perspectives or Jewish perspectives. Jews and Christians have all sorts of a tradition that try to protect the environment. You see in the Old Testament that the Jewish laws that say that the land needs to have a rest, and that the rest, you know, the Sabbath of the land is every 7 years. And we see that in our Christian past, that the medieval church, when it had more say over society, would tell people you have to take and divide your land into 7 parcels, and every year one parcel has to rest, and then you can farm on the other, so let it lie fallow. And that farmers would do this and take care of the environment. And respect for the environment is part of our faith. So that's just not true. So we shouldn't jump into believing in a feminine god, a goddess, or earth goddess, or mother goddess, or any of that kind of thing, just because we want to have a feminine approach towards the creation and a holistic approach. As a matter of fact, when we take a look at the way that this feminist approach is used in other societies, and a pantheistic approach is used in other societies, it leads to the kind of caste system that we see in India and the lack of social structures to take care of the poor that have gone on in India over the centuries. So it's not a panacea and it's not a solution to our problems. We're going to come back in just a moment to continue to look at this problem of the paradigm shift and the different view of reality. So please stay with us. Welcome back. We've been describing some of the ways in which physics are being used within the New Age movement to help make a paradigm shift. And when we talk about a paradigm, just to remind us of the definition that Marilyn Ferguson, in her book The Aquarian Conspiracy, one of the key books for understanding the New Age movement and the paradigm shift, this paradigm is described in this way. A paradigm is a framework of thought. A paradigm is a scheme for understanding and explaining certain aspects of reality. A paradigm shift is a distinctly new way about problems. Now, that, can you see the kind of radical difference that some of the New Agers are trying to get us to think in? And a completely different framework where there's no objectivity, reason, rationality is not so important. As a matter of fact, needs to be put secondary and use intuitive thinking as being more primary as a way to deal with the uncertainty and the complementarity of subatomic parts. And then they try to change this to have a metaphysical understanding of reality. Now, metaphysics means in Greek, actually, after physics. All right, and this is because Aristotle, the Greek philosopher, had a section of his study called the physics, studying nature, The species is the Greek word that means nature. And then when he started to talk about other questions that flow from the understanding of nature, he called it metaphysics, that is, after physics. And this usually refers to the study of the nature of being. When you say that I am, what does that mean? When you say that God is, what does that mean? Who is God? How does that relate to creation? This is the question of metaphysics. And the new metaphysics that is drawn from the physics is that all of the world is energy, all of the world is one, and that all of the world is God, because God is energy. That's the conclusion they draw. Now, as we've already seen, that they're talking mostly about subatomic particles. And then to jump from subatomic particles as if that's the very essence of reality, and then say that this is the basis for all metaphysics, that this is the basis for understanding who God is and the nature of the human soul, and then to say that because the human mind affects the way we look at things, that therefore the human mind creates reality, is to say too much. And it's going too far. And we have to take a step back and ask a lot of questions about both the physics and the metaphysics that the New Agers are trying to use and impose on us. We have to be able to stand back with a certain amount of comfort and say, all right, I'm going to learn what I can about physics to deal with these questions, and if when possible, I'm going to ask people who are physicists. That's how I do it. I'm not an expert in physics by any means. I've studied a bit. I've taken a little bit of coursework in it in college, but not nearly enough to be an expert. And so I try to contact those who are experts and see, what does this mean? And they say, to me anyway, that it does not have these kind of metaphysical ramifications. It doesn't mean that reality is, or the nature of being is necessarily different. We just don't know that. So we have to hold back on this paradigm shift, and we have to at least hold back in saying that physics supports it. A certain interpretation of physics supports it, but not physics in and of itself. So keep that in mind, and we need to relax with that and be comfortable with it and comfortable with the things that are being taught in the new physics and try to learn what we can from it. Now, at the same time, we also have to be aware that the New Agers are, on the other hand, trying to find the meaning of life. They're trying to find a sense for life and a sense for how to behave in the world today. Now, we should commend them for that. And if that's a positive thing, that they're trying to see how can we not blow our planet up? How can we use science so that it doesn't pollute the environment, so that it helps to build up the ecology? Now, these have been concerns of the last few years in particular, and we should commend that. But we need to do so also from what we have given to us by God, and see that the Lord is calling us to understand the whole of reality as best we can and respond to it. Now, one area that we're going to have to really cover in our next episode in more detail is the role of the brain. Because some of the New Agers will say that the new research on the brain supports the paradigm shift by saying that there are two sides to the brain. There's a right side and a left side, and they're right. The brain is divided down the middle. And they want to say that on the left side of the brain is reasoning, taking things apart, trying to understand logical, linear ways of thought, and that that fits with the physics of Newton. Whereas the right side of the brain is intuitive, and that it sees the whole picture, and grasps new ideas, just all of a sudden, because it sees the whole. And this understanding of the brain is something that goes back, and it's based on real science, but then we have to say, how influential should this be in our way of thought? There is a real sense in which we have to understand intuition and creativity and having images of the world is very important. And we don't need to reject that. But we don't have to make such a radical distinction and separation between the two. The thing that I become concerned about is that if everything is intuitive, And everything is, as they say, because they identify intuition with the feminine, even though, in fact, be very intuitive and see things creatively. But women can be very rational, and they can see things in a linear way, you know, that the two things, you know, are both genders. But they want to see that shift take place among us, and that kind of shift, you know, goes from brain research to an understanding of the nature of God and the nature of human beings, and it says too much. Instead, Christ calls us to put on a new mind. He asks us to think from the perspective of God and to see things the way God sees them, and to look upon the way the Lord, or Jesus Christ, loves the creation that He made. Remember, Jesus is the Word of God through whom all things came into being. And He sustains everything. It's all made through Him and for Him. And we can come to see that perspective and love it and grow into it. Come back next time and we'll continue to talk about this new mind in Christ. God bless you.
Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the costs, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will.